Hey guys, I'm Megan.
And I'm Sydney.
And this is Tales of the Wicked. Hey guys, how's it going? How's your week, Vincent? I haven't really talked to you this week.
It's actually been really good. As all of you listeners know, there was like a huge snowstorm last week, 2 weeks ago. It's been snowing for like 2 weeks straight now. And today in Ohio, it is like 39 degrees, which is like a summer's day. So I left work and I literally was driving with my windows cracked and I was like, this is the most amazing day ever. It's 39 degrees. It's like summer. It's all good.
I still hate it. I'm still locked in my house with 100 sweaters on.
Oh, I was so happy. I was like at work and my coworker was like, it's like 39 degrees outside right now. And I was like, are you kidding? And I was like, I don't even want to put my coat on. Like, it's going to be so nice. It's definitely still cold. Like 39 degrees is still really, really cold. But I went to work over the weekend and I had to drive in at like 6:30 and my car said it was -9 degrees. And I was like, this is stupid. I was like driving at 6:30 in the morning in the dark and my hands, I had like my coat pulled over my hands and I was holding the steering wheel and I was just like staring like with a blank face into like the abyss. And I was like, I don't want to live here anymore. I just need to go.
Yeah. That's what it is when I'm coming home from work at 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
So I know exactly what you're thinking.
It's freezing. How's your week been?
It's been fine. Still working overtime, still hating it, you know, the usual.
Hey, that extra moolah for our trip.
I know. It's literally the only reason why I'm still doing it.
I know. There's actually extra days at work to pick up, and I was like, do I do it? Do I really want to do it? But it'll be worth it.
So today I have kind of a longer episode. So we're not really going to talk too much at the beginning here today, which I'm sure you guys are thankful for because we're really annoying. But this is also a little bit of a special episode, I guess you could call it. It's my brother's birthday tomorrow as we're recording this. It'll be tomorrow when it... His birthday is the day we release it. So I let him pick between two cases and this is the one he picked, so I am excited to read it for you guys. And Sid has been very anxiously waiting to hear what this is.
I have. I literally was driving to work this morning, and I was like, could it be about this? No. Could it be about this? No. Like, I don't know. I have no idea what it is. And if it's really bad, I'm going to don't know Keith at all. I've never even, well, I saw him at your wedding, but I've never met him.
That's okay. You never will.
I'm going to personally be like, hey, screw you for this case. You don't know me and I don't know you, but I didn't like that.
Yeah,
didn't appreciate it.
Well, he didn't know anything about this case either. He just heard the name and got excited about it, so
dang. Alrighty, okay. Then
so when I was doing my research for this case, I came across this fun little list and I wanted you to try to guess some things on it. So it is, as of 2021, the 10 states with the highest murder rates.
Wait, you're asking me the question?
Yeah, so I have the list in front of me. But okay. What do you think are, like, some of the states? I'll give you, like, 5 guesses.
Okay, so I'm going to say my guesses would be California. I'm going to give you 5. California, Florida. I do think Ohio is on this list. Or like the serial killer capital of the world or something like that, I think I saw. Or this could be totally wrong. That's 3.
Mm-hmm.
For some, Florida, California. I want to say like some kind of like, let's do... I don't even, let's do Texas. Sure, Texas is a big state. They got a lot of killers down there. One more. This is just a Colorado. I don't know anything about it, but let's do that.
Okay, so you said California, Florida, Ohio, Texas, Colorado?
Yes.
You didn't get a single one.
Are you serious?
According to worldpopulationreview.com, the 10 states with the highest murder rates as of 2021 are, I'm going to go in order, so from 1 to 10.
Okay.
Louisiana, Missouri, Nevada, Maryland, Arkansas, Alaska, Alabama, Mississippi, Illinois, and South Carolina.
We're going to Nevada in like a couple weeks, and they're one of the...
Number three.
Ohio's not on that list?
Nope.
What?
But at one point, Aaron did tell, I don't know why he knew this, but at one point, Youngstown was like the murder capital.
Okay, is that what it was? Is that what I'm trying to like mix it up with?
Yeah.
Okay, I was gonna say, I know something in Ohio. I do know about Ohio because the way that our like highways run and stuff, it's a really, really popular area for sex traffickers because you can get through the state really easily. I do know that about Ohio. Sense. And yeah, that's like a solid fact. Yeah, the way that our highway system works or something like that, like Ohio's a really good place for sex traffickers and people that abduct kids and stuff like that, but which is really sad. But wow, yeah. I'm surprised that like even like California isn't, I feel like I hear a lot of cases about California.
Yeah, I do too, but I mean that's what this website says, so I don't know the accuracy, but
the website doesn't know as much as I do, so
yeah.
I'm just kidding. Wow, that's really interesting. Yeah, I am. Thank you.
You're
Megan.
Welcome.
Dang. So I'm assuming one of our cases in one of these states.
Let me refer back to my list, but I don't think so. I think a couple years ago, this case was in a state that was on the list, but as of now, it is not.
That state is no longer on the list.
Sorry, I had to pull it up. No, it is not on this list anymore.
Hmm.
But it was back at some point during this time. Because this case starts in 1999.
Hmm. Okay.
As most cases do, I feel like.
Okay. They're all in the 90s. It was a wild time for people.
All right. Are you ready to get into this? You're finally going to hear what I've been going on about for like 2 weeks now?
No, I'm not, but let's do this.
Okay,
I'm about to sit back and relax and let's
go. Take a deep breath.
Take a deep breath in and whew.
Okay, so really quick, I just wanted to say that there's a big trigger warning for rape, kidnapping, and sexual abuse. That's what this entire case is about. So if that's not anything you want to hear about, I completely understand. And we will see you next week.
I'll pick something happy for next week.
Yeah, happy murder. Okay, so if anyone's still here, hey, how's it going?
Hey, hi.
So today, I'm going to say the name of it. I'm curious to see if you know this case. We're going to be talking about the Toy Box Killer.
I've heard this before.
You have?
I've heard of this, but I don't know like that many details.
Okay, well, I have a lot of details, so.
But now that you give the title, I could see why someone would be like, oh, the Toy Box Killer, sure.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, he was like, you know what? I don't want to hear anymore. That's what I want to hear. I'm like, all right, sounds good. We'll do it.
Well, happy birthday, Keith. Here's the story of the Toy Box Killer.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Thank
Fucker.
You. Yeah.
All right. So we're going to get into it now. Serious voice.
Podcast voice, please.
If at a future date there are any major changes in our procedures, the tape will be upgraded. Now you are obviously here against your will, totally helpless, and don't know where you're at, don't know what's going to happen to you. You're very scared or very pissed off. I'm sure that you've already tried to get your wrists and ankles loose and know that you can't. Now you're just waiting to see what's going to happen next. End quote.
I'm already like mad.
Yeah, that's just literally like the first paragraph.
Can you tell me he gets caught?
Oh, yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's go.
I read on a few different sources that Cynthia was quoted saying that she knew by the way he spoke to her, she knew that she was not his first victim. And I don't think she had any idea of how right she would have been. It was rumored that Ray had upwards of 50 victims. However, only a few would be identified. They were the survivors. And as of like today, still, they have not found a single dead body. So whether or not anyone was killed, they can't prove it, but they're pretty certain he killed like 50 women. After 3 days of Cynthia being held at this home, Ray had unhooked her handcuffs and shackles around her feet. So this is something he would do like kind of during the day when he wasn't, you know, like torturing her. He mm-hmm. would undo her ankle and wrist shackles. And then she had that collar around her neck that had like, I'm pretty sure it was like connected with a chain to like the wall or the bed or something. So that mm-hmm. way she had range like to walk around the room in her free time, if you want to call it.
Okay.
So for the first like 3 days, he was staying at the house, didn't go to work, and was completely torturing her. And then after that third day, he decided to go back to work. And he left his girlfriend who lived with him, Cindy Hindy, in charge of Cynthia while he was gone, and she had the keys. So she was distracted, I guess, and went to go take a phone call, and she left the keys to the chains on the coffee table. Now, I don't know if she did it as a test or if she was actually just distracted and left them there. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But Cynthia noticed that Cindy was distracted and that the keys were on the table. So she tried to grab them. Like she like stretched out as far as she could and she was trying to grab them. And then Cindy came back and saw that she was going for the keys. So she wrestled the keys away from her. And, you know, there was a big like scuffle. They're trying to get the keys from each other. And Cindy hit Cynthia in the head with a lamp, thinking it would knock her out. But being the badass that she was, Cynthia just got up and I don't know why this was in the living room, but there was an ice pick and she slashed Cindy Hindy in the face with the ice pick and was able to get herself free and she ran out the front door.
Holy.
And at some point during this whole situation, Cynthia was able to get the phone and she dialed 911, but wasn't able to say anything and then hung up. And I'm pretty sure that I saw in one source that the 911 sent like a couple officers over for like a wellness check.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this also happened at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay.
Naked and bleeding from the cut on her head, Cynthia runs down the street. She comes across a few oncoming cars yelling for help, but the drivers didn't stop for her and they just kept going. Which, I mean, I kind of get that. Like, you, like, reading this case, you're like, oh, like, why the fuck didn't you stop? But, like, if you're just driving down a residential road and you see a naked lady with a collar on her bleeding, screaming and running around in the streets, you kind of don't want to stop for that. But
it's freaky. Like, you don't know why that's
yeah,
happening.
But I mean, like, hopefully, like, one of them called the cops when they saw that.
Right.
And then I saw this. I saw two different things, but they basically are, like, the same story. So, in one of my sources, I saw that she came to a house that had the door open, and she ran inside and locked the door behind her. Mm-hmm. But then in other sources, I saw that she came up to a house, knocked on the door, and a couple let her in. Either way, she ends up in a house, and she's safe. It doesn't really, I guess, matter if she walked in herself or if they let her in. Right. But she came to this couple's house, and thankfully, they immediately just, like, took her in. They, you know, covered her up, called 911, got her to the hospital, and Cynthia was finally safe.
Wow.
So I'm going to give a brief background, and obviously this is how he's going to get caught. This was his last victim. So I'm going to give a brief background on David Parker Ray and his main accomplice, Cindy Hindy, and then we're going to go into details about the trailer, which he calls the toy box. And when we talk about the toy box, I have a series of photos, so I'm going to send you a link so that way while I'm describing everything, you can look at the pictures.
Okay.
So David Parker Ray was born November 6, 1939 in Belen, New Mexico. He was said to have an abusive alcoholic father who gave him magazines with masochistic porn. And this obviously, like, at a young age gave him a really warped vision on sex and how women are supposed to be treated. Not only was his father abusive towards him, but he was also abusive towards his mom. And, like, you know, with looking at all these, like, violent porn images and then watching your dad hit your mom and your dad hit you, that's gonna, like, really set you up for a messed up view on how sex and relationships are supposed to go together and just work in general. But no matter what cards he was dealt in life, it was ultimately his choice to let this take over him and create the monster that he became today. So, like, obviously, just because if that's, you know, your unfortunate upbringing, it doesn't mean that you have to turn into the monster that he did. He's a piece of shit, so he did.
Mm-hmm.
He was a mechanic, and I believe also he worked as a maintenance person for the park. There was, like, a big, like, park and lake outside of where he lived in Elephant Butte. So it was Elephant Butte Lake is where he lived and worked. It was like a big trailer community too. So it was like this desert area with a big lake, a bunch of trailer homes, and then a few like regular houses, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He was married and divorced 4 times. And then some sources say he had 1 daughter. Others say that he had 2 daughters, but regardless of how many he had, there is one that is relevant to the story, and her name is Glenda Jean Ray, but she goes by Jessie Ray. So now we're going to talk about Cindy Hendy. She was born in 1960 in Washington. Similar to Ray, she had grown up in a toxic household at the hands of an alcoholic parent. This time it was her mother. She was very neglectful, and I read, like, her mom, like, couldn't even be bothered to give her food. Like, she would have to, like, beg her mom, and her mom would, like, throw her a can of tuna.
Are you serious?
Yeah. She was forced to move out at the age of 12 after Hendy's stepfather tried to rape her. So what it was is he crawled into her bed at night and was, like, trying to rape her. And then when Cindy was, like, telling him to go, he was like, oh, sorry, like, I'm drunk, I got into the wrong bed. Which is the dumbest fucking excuse I've ever heard. But her mom bought it and made Cindy leave the house at the age of 12.
Are you serious?
Yes. Well, I mean, are you that surprised? Like, she won't even feed her.
Yeah, I mean, parenting 101. Wow.
Well, this is one of the situations where, you know, we're going to feel sorry for child Cindy, but then adult Cindy can get fucked. So.
Yeah, right.
After being on her own, Hendy turned to sex work to get by, also becoming addicted to alcohol and cocaine. It was during this time she found her sexual fascination with quote-unquote rough sex. And I say that in quotes because she wanted to rape prostitutes. So that's not really what I would call rough sex. That's just raping someone that's, you know, not consensual at all.
Yeah.
And I guess she was known for, like, dating different drug dealers, and these were the kind of men that she was conspiring with to do those acts with. In 1997, she fled to Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, where she met her soon-to-be boyfriend, David Ray. They worked – oh, she – I forgot to put this in, but she fled Washington because of I think, like, Grand Theft Auto charges.
Huh.
Or it was, I think, a theft charge. I don't know. She was being charged for something, so she was running away.
You can tell me anything and I'll believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. I forgot to write that down, but she was running from the law. So she went to New Mexico.
Okay.
And they met at work. They worked at the park together and somehow just casually found out that they're both into raping people.
All right.
Yeah. I don't really know how that conversation came up, but after she moved in with him, he began to confess his murders to her. He claimed to have killed one woman every year for 40 years. What? Hendy told officers that they would be able to find the human remains of his murder victims in the desert. In the lake. I also forgot to write that part down, but I remember that she said in the lake.
Okay.
But despite all of their efforts, they still can't find any traces of any human remains anywhere. But, I mean, killing one woman every year for 40 years, that's at least 40 victims at that point. And he was 20 years older than her. So when they got, when they got arrested, he was 59 and she was, I believe, like 39. So they met in 97. Well, he confessed in 97, so he would have been like 57.
Mm-hmm.
So he probably would have started killing even before his, I guess you'd call, 40-year streak. So that's where I guess they're estimating the other 10 women come from.
Okay.
But this is all alleged because they can't find any victims of that.
They can't find anything?
No, they can't. Like, they have searched. Like, they have a hotline, which actually I have the information for that. So that way, if you know anything, like, if anyone out there knows anything about any possible victims, you know, come forward, let them know. Because, like, they can't find anything. But, I mean, it's a lake and it's the desert in New Mexico where there's harsh conditions, a lot of animals. So, I mean, the odds are really against them at this point.
Yeah.
And it's like there's 40 years between when the murders happened and when they're finding out about them. So there's also all that time against them too.
Yeah.
According to Hendy, Ray would brag about how he killed his victims. Oh, and then dump them in the lake. Okay, so I did write that down. Quote, "The thing to do is cut them down the belly, scoop out their guts, fill the chest cavity with cement weights, and then use balling wire to wrap them up," she said. And that was a quote from allthat'sinteresting.com. Hendy soon began to talk about how she would help Ray pick up his victims from a bar. So that was also their thing. They always picked up their victims from a certain bar. And I didn't write down the name of that bar.
Does no one like is realizing that women are going are missing? I don't.
They're all sex workers.
No, that's right. My brain is just like hurts right now, and I just can't even think straight. Okay, keep going.
I mean, for the most part, they're all sex workers. I think two of the ones we're going to talk about might not be. I don't remember.
Okay.
She mentions this one victim in particular. And I really couldn't find much information on her. So I'm not positive if she says that, like, this is the first one. So I don't know if this is the first one she helped him with or like the first one that she just wanted to talk about. Like I said, there's really not enough, like much information on her. But she said the first victim she helped him with was a woman named Angela. She was an acquaintance of Hendy's. And they would go out drinking at this bar, and she said she spiked her drinks and assisted Ray in the kidnapping. And I couldn't find any more information on that. So she could be one of the mystery murder victims. We really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So now if you want to open up that link that I sent you, we're going to be talking about Inside the Toy Box. And then this is also referred to as Satan's Den. He had a homemade sign that he put in there, and it said Satan's Den on it. So everything in here, they were all homemade devices that Ray had constructed himself. He had an estimated $100,000 put into all of this, and that's soundproofing the trailer, getting all of the equipment, if you want to call it. So inside, he had a gynecologist chair that he would use to restrain the women and hold them down so that way they were completely powerless and they couldn't move because he had like big straps on the arms and the legs. He, like I said, soundproofed the trailer. He covered the entire place wall to wall in devices, so different types of restraints, gags. He had this one that I saw featured a couple times. He had a dildo that he added nails to. And I'm just going to let your imagination take over for that one. He had a box that he would lock onto women's heads. He had whips. I also read that he had mirrors on the ceiling so that way they could see what was happening to them. There were a lot of books on female anatomy. He had photographs of previous victims and the things that had happened to them. He had diagrams of how all these devices worked and just like basically any nightmare contraption that you could think of, he had in that trailer.
I was about to say, I don't mean to sound soft, but like, I literally just like looking at these pictures and hearing you say all this stuff, like, I feel like I could actually start, like, I like had tears well in my eyes there for a second. Like, I just can't believe that people had to go through this.
Yeah. Like, and for a second, someone, I couldn't tell, like, if you were speechless or like got disconnected.
No, I'm like trying to disconnect, but I'm also thinking about people going through this, and it's just, I don't understand what it is about. I don't know, like, what, I don't care how fucked up your childhood was, like, you just don't do that to people. And I, to put, how you said $1,000, how much money?
$100,000.
$100,000 into a trailer so that you could torture people like this. And to, he plays a video that literally says, hello, bitch, like, I bet you're wondering why you're here, you're not comfortable. Like, I just, yeah. I,
it's
like,
so
what
rehearsed, it's so sickening.
And sick and twisted isn't even, like, the right word to say. I just can't even, like, wrap my head around this right now. It's too much. It's way too much.
Yeah, and the thing that really blew me away is not only is there one person that's so sick to do this.
Two.
He had three accomplices.
Are you serious? And, like, that...
Three accomplices.
And Cindy, like, she's a woman. And yeah. You... The things that you're... They're literally in the one picture that Megan has pulled up for me to look at. And like she said in her explanation, there is something on the wall and it's literally like, you're perfect. I do. So like, I am an ultrasound tech. Like that's what I do. And the picture that is on the wall is of like the female anatomy. Like if you cut the body a certain way to show the uterus and the ovaries and all that. And like, literally I know this picture by heart because this is what I look at for my job. And it's just like sitting on the wall and I just like, I can't stop. I don't know what it is about this picture. I see it all the time, but I can't stop staring at it because it's just like the fact
because you look at it in a medical way, this is being used in a torturous way.
I can't
like
even.
He's studying the woman anatomy to figure out
how he can
bring
hurt
on the
them.
Most torture. Yeah.
I just, all right, keep going. I'm gonna
So I'm just going to say really quick, I'm not obviously posting any of these pictures on the Instagram, but I am going to post a link to where I found this photo archive of them. So if you want to go see it, it'll be in the show notes in the episode and I'll have it labeled so that way you know what series it is. So yeah, if you want to look at these pictures, you can, but I'm not going to post them on the Instagram so that way no one has to see them if they don't want to. Now that the investigators had Cynthia's story, that opened their eyes to all of the crimes that Ray had kept private for so long, and they were tasked with finding out exactly how many victims he had, who these women were, and, you know, like, what happened to them? Are they alive? Are they dead? Did they have a serial killer on their hands? Like, they needed to figure out exactly what was going on now. Like most killers, or supposed killers, Ray had kept photos and video mementos of his victims, which thankfully these were used to give investigators a chance to identify these women so that way they could give them the justice that they deserved or try to find these women if they were alive. Because also one of his biggest things is he called it a cocktail. He would put together a cocktail of pills and drugs so that way they wouldn't remember anything. And we're actually going to get into that now. They don't remember anything. Like, some of these women, like, they got away from this and they didn't even know that this happened to them. So.
I mean, I guess that's a good thing.
I guess so. Yeah.
Is it? I don't. There's not a single good thing about it. If it happened to you
yeah.
And the women that it did happen to, there's not. I mean, your brain protects you from trauma, like kind of like when people have accidents where they hit their head and have a concussion, like a lot of people don't remember it because your brain protects you from that experience.
Yeah,
like my cousin fell out of a side-by-side and smacked his head on the concrete and had a brain bleed and was in the hospital, and like he couldn't tell you what he was doing before he fell off the side-by-side. He couldn't tell you how he did. He didn't know how he got to the hospital. It's just I don't, that is such a traumatic thing that someone would go through to be tortured like that. So,
Yeah, I'm sure it is a bit of a mercy, I guess, if you want to call it that, they don't remember
yeah,
it. But
that's
I
a
mean,
better
how,
way to say that.
that's just another like added factor of how fucked up this is. He had a formulated cocktail to know exactly what to give them and how much of what to give them, so that way they wouldn't remember this, so that way he could get away with it again.
And like my thought is how many times did he have to try to mix this cocktail to get the, you know what I mean? It's not like the first time that
Yeah,
he did
maybe
this to
that's how he
someone.
killed some of his victims, is he
Yes,
overdosed them.
exactly. Like the women that he did this to in the beginning, not that it is any better, no matter where you're at in the timeline, but the women in the beginning, like he was probably still experimenting on what he wanted to do and how he wanted to do things. And what if that's, you know, that cocktail, it probably took him a long time to perfect it, to know what
Yeah.
to do.
Okay, so I have a quote from one of my sources, dgomag.com. And this is going to talk about one of the other victims. Quote, investigators discovered a video from 1996 in Ray's possession that depicted another victim and publicized her ankle tattoo in hopes of identifying her. A woman came forward identifying the tattoo as belonging to her ex-daughter-in-law, Kelly Garrett. Garrett was indeed alive and living in Colorado. She'd once lived in the area and had been friends with Ray's daughter, Glenda Jean Jessie Ray. Garrett told police that on July 24th, 1996, she had gotten into a fight with her husband and decided to hit the bars with some of her friends to blow off steam. That night, Jessie Ray met up with Garrett at the, oh, this is the name of the bar that they took. I knew I had it in somewhere. So, that night, Jessie Ray met up with Garrett at the Blue Water Saloon in Truth or Consequences, which is where he picked up all of his victims from.
Okay.
And then to continue the quote, just 5 miles south of Elephant Butte, at some point during the night, Jessie drugged Garrett's beer. She was taken to Ray's trailer, where he attached a dog collar and leash to Garrett. Like Cynthia, she was drugged and tortured for 2 days before Ray dumped her. No one, not even her husband or police, believed her strange, horrific story. Her husband divorced her, believing that she was cheating on him while she was missing, and she moved to Colorado with no answers for actually what happened to her during those 2 days. So she came home after 2 days of being missing, told her husband that she was kidnapped, raped, tortured, and he was like, "No, you're cheating on me." And just divorced her.
Oh my gosh.
Like, could you imagine that? Like, I hope that he found out that her story was true and felt like the biggest piece of shit on this planet. Like, how could you not believe your spouse at
Yeah, I
all?
don't know. There
At
had to
all.
be something more going on back, like behind that.
Well, I mean, like, I'm sure that she dodged the bullet on a shitty marriage and was able to get out. So,
Yes, yeah. If he didn't believe her, then good. Like, find
yeah.
someone better.
Another victim who had survived the abuse of Ray and Hindi was Angelica Montano. She was an acquaintance of Ray's and had gone. Okay, so I only saw this in one source, so I don't know how true this is, but this is what I saw, so this is what I'm going to put in. She was an acquaintance of Ray's and had gone to his home to borrow cake mix, where she was drugged, captured. And this happened just a month before Cynthia was captured. She was released by Ray and Hindi. Now, I know this part is true. The part about her going there for cake mix, I only saw that in one place, so I don't know. But everything else I saw in all of my sources, so I know this part is true. She was dumped on the side of the highway. So, like, they made her promise, like, okay, like, we'll release you and let you go if you don't tell anyone. And I kind of want to believe the story about her, like, being his acquaintance, because how would he be able to prove that a stranger, didn't go to the police? So he's like, I know who you are. I know where you live. If, you
Right.
tell the police, I'm gonna have someone come after you. So that
Exactly.
actually makes a lot of sense.
And with the things that he did, she was probably so scared. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would believe that.
But she was on the side of the highway and she was picked up by a police officer who she confessed her story to. But again, he didn't believe her. He offered to take her to the station anyway, so that way she could still make a report just in case. but she was so terrified for her safety that she declined it. She was like, I already told one person I wasn't supposed to. I'm not making a report about this. And I absolutely do not blame her for being too afraid for her own safety.
Yeah.
I don't blame her at all.
Yeah.
Who was raped by Ray and then strangled to death by Yancey. He dumped her body in the desert. Ray faced three trials, one of which had come to a mistrial. I read that two of the jurors, oh, this pissed me off. I read that they said that they didn't feel right about putting him away just because he liked rough sex. I'm like, did they even see the fucking evidence that was brought to trial? That's not rough sex. He raped and kidnapped and tortured these women. That's not, oh, he liked rough sex, so I can't put him away. No, you even pay attention? Were you even there?
Why like, did you so look many at the people evidence? That are like, they didn't believe her. And then that's just, I don't. Keith is never picking another case ever.
In his defense, he didn't know anything about this.
I do not even care. You say something to him and he goes, yeah, that one sounds good. Nope, not doing that one. Not happening. This is Megan. You better get your stuff together. Ugh. All right. So not enough evidence, or he just likes some rough sex, just casual. Got it.
Can I go on?
Yeah, I'm like so fired up right now. I'm so sorry. We're almost done. I'm so sorry to everyone listening that I keep cutting Megan off. I'm just like, I'm mad.
It's understandable, but we're almost done. So
okay, keep going.
Hang on. Either way, the case was brought back to court, and the second trial, I forget what happened with the second trial. I think, like, the judge died before he could do sentencing. I don't know, something weird.
Okay.
And then the third trial, he was found guilty on all accounts and sentenced to 224 years in prison.
Not long enough.
Well, unfortunately, he would only see 2 years in prison. Because he died of a heart attack in 2002.
God. Oh, my God.
I know.
Are you kidding me?
Don't worry. We still have to talk about Cindy Hindi.
Oh, I could cry. I'm so mad. Okay, tell me about Cindy.
So, in efforts to avoid a 195-year sentence, she took a plea deal, of course, to give information on Ray and Yancey. She was still sentenced to 36 years, although she would only serve 19 due to legislation allowing her early release. However, 3 months after her release, they changed that law to require violent offenders to have to serve 85% of their sentence. So she would have had to, like, serve most of her sentence if she was in there 3 months longer. And she was not required, I don't know why, but she was not required to give, the court's, like, updates on where she's living, like, if she's changed her name. So she's out and about. No one knows, like, what she's doing. So she's allowed to just put this behind her. But, I mean, like, obviously people in that area know what she, like, they know what she looks like. So, I mean,
there's no way she lives in that area.
No, yeah. Yancey served 11 years before being released in parole in 2011. But he was sent back to prison for violating his probation and had to serve the remainder of his sentence. He was released in, I believe, 2021, so last year. And then Jesse Ray only received a sentence of 9 years. And then I have a little, this is a very, very long quote, but this is actually some good. So Cynthia has done and is still continuing to do very important work to protect women. And I have this website. They did such a great quote to talk about everything that she's done since the trial and everything. So I wanted to just read this long quote. This is from dgomag.com again. So, quote, while the life of Cynthia Vigil-Jaramillo hasn't been easy, it's clear from her escape from the nightmare on 513 Bass Road that she won't go down easily. She spoke publicly about her ordeal for the first time in 2011. To encourage other victims to come forward. Her voice was soft, but there was no mistaking the strength that cut sharply with each word. Please, you guys, come forward. This was a very sick man, and these families need the closure, she said at times, wiping away tears. During the press conference, the FBI released a photograph of a woman that authorities took from a fake driver's license found in Ray's possessions, and a photograph of Jill Torrio was last seen October 1st, 1995, at the Frontier restaurant with Ray's daughter. She is still missing. After the bodies of 11 women were found buried in the Albuquerque desert, in a different case, Hermio connected with Christine Barber, and the two commiserated about how violence against sex workers is often overlooked. Those who live, quote-unquote, high-risk lifestyles, sex workers, the homeless, and addicts, are often seen as much less sympathetic victims, especially if they are people of color. The violence they experience is often brushed off and their murders go unsolved. All I want is for there to be a group that pays attention to the women on the streets, Hermio said. The two founded Street Safe New Mexico in 2010, a volunteer-based nonprofit that provides support to women living on the streets who struggle with homelessness, addiction, and or have been victims of human trafficking. You won't find them in an office making calls or conducting studies, though. The nonprofit works on the street with the women, passing out non-lethal weapons to them for free. They also put together a bad guy list of violent men that they hand out to the women. The nonprofit's website ends with this description. This is how we advocate. Hard. Anyone with information about David Parker Ray or any potential victims should contact the FBI at 505-889-1300. To support Street Safe, visit streetsafenewmexico.org. So I'm going to post the FBI line and the Street Safe support website in our link, so that way if anyone needs to go visit those resources, they can. And that is the end of the Toy Box Killer.
Thank God.
Ugh, I hated that one.
I'm sitting on my bed listening to this, and I have moved so many different positions. I've had my head in my hands. I started curling up. People can hear me fiddling around. Everything about what I did in this episode, I'm very sorry that you had to listen to me complain and move around.
It's okay. It's definitely a really rough one to listen to. Might be even rougher to read. I don't know which one it was worse for us, but yeah, so.
I don't know how you looked up all that information for multiple days and wrote it all out, and now you have to, happy birthday.
I did that all in one day, and it was a very long day. It took me, I'm not even kidding, all day to write that case yesterday, because I kept, I would write a paragraph, and I would just, close out of the page. I needed to take a break. I'd watch TV, get back into it, write some more, close out of it. But we're done.
Oh, thank you. Uh-huh. Thank you for that. Whoever made it through the end of this episode and listened to this whole case, next week will not be this heavy.
And I can tell you that the week after next week will not be this heavy.
This is about as messed up and wicked as it gets here on Tales of the Wicked.
Yeah.
And even us two wicked gals don't even, I can't think straight, and I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm babbling at this point.
I'm planning out my episode, so the next heavy one I'm gonna cover is BTK, and I'm gonna space it out enough that I'm not gonna cover that until probably March.
Okay.
Just cool. To give us some time to recover.
Cool. I like that.
Yeah, I'm trying to space out the big ones.
Yep, that'd be great.
So yeah, if you stay till the end of this episode, thank you for listening. I also wanted to say something really quick. Yeah. So I feel like I have not been doing the best research that I could have been doing, just throughout the course of the 12 episodes we have. So this was my first deep dive, I guess you want to call it. And I'm going to try to do more of these deep dives, just because, if the people are going to listen, I want to give them good information, so that way it's not just, oh, this person died. This person died. Let's make a joke. You know, like, I want to give them, like, good quality content. Yeah. So, you know, I hope you guys liked this episode.
Yeah.
Information-wise, a little bit more. Yeah. I tried to get as deep as I could into this.
Yeah. I appreciate it listening to you give the case. I mean, I think that you did a really good job at, you know, giving a history of the people and the crimes that they committed and how it all kind of happened from beginning to end.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
You're welcome.
So we're going to, well, I'm going to try to do that more. And, yeah, no, obviously not all of them are going to be this heavy, but I feel like I tend to gravitate towards the darker cases. So you're typically going to hear the darker cases in my episodes.
Yes.
And I'm going to try to, like, give you a warning, like, when it's Sid's episode, and then towards the end, I'm like, okay, like, next week's mine. This one's going to be kind of heavy. So that way you guys can kind of, like, brace yourselves. And if it's not anything you want to listen to, we absolutely understand. And we hope that you join us for the next one after that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have anything else to say before we close out, Sid?
You know, I'm not even here right now, so I have nothing for you.
Okay, well, go hug your puppy, go hug your cat, recover emotionally.
I will.
And we'll talk next week.
Absolutely.
All right, guys. Well, if you listen to the end again, thank you. And don't forget to rate, review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. It really, really helps out the show. And we obsessively look at all of it. So
we do.
We definitely appreciate it. And if you like the show, please share with your friends. I don't know if that's something you want to share with your friends, but it would help us out. So we really appreciate it. And we want to thank everyone who's been listening up to this point. Like, we have been having so much fun with this. Yes. And we would like to continue to do this. So,
right.
All right. Well, we will talk to you guys next week.
Yep.
And as always, keep it creepy.
Keep it creepy.
Bye.
See ya.